The great thing about Atlas Butler is they do it all. Heating, cooling, plumbing. Look, I'm busy with work. I don't have time to wait around or deal with lots of people. One company, one call, and they do it all. Wonder if they'll clean out my inbox. Seriously, offer that service. Please.
Atlas Butler is at your service. Call 1-800-FURNACE.
Football on off the ball.
I will definitely have a question about you. Am I okay saying you're committed to Ireland? And he said, yes, no problem. So he is in our frame. He might be one that we would call in June.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Formula One pod on Off The Ball. Brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause, have a break, have a KitKat.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of the F1 pod on Off The Ball. And as always, the F1 pod on Off The Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing breaks to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. I am joined as usual in studio to my left-hand side by Kira Tracy. Kira, how are you?
I am fantastic. It has been so great to have some racing.
Exactly. And racing is back, Formula 1 is back, and we are delighted to be joined by Bernie Collins. Bernie, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Great to be back.
Exactly. Friend of the show. It's been a while since we've had the F1 pod. Obviously, Shane has moved up and up and off the ball. He's not here, sat here anymore, but you've me and Kira for today.
Yeah, no, it's great to meet you both and great to be here. And like Kira said, great to have some racing back again.
Yes, exactly. It's been such an unusual start to the season with this big, long 5-week gap. And I think a lot of people were worried, you know, will this affect the momentum of the season? But it's certainly not affected Kimi Antonelli's momentum. My goodness, 20 points clear at the championship. This was a fantastic kind of race weekend for him.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, like you just said, when we were leaving Japan, there was a lot of discussion, how's it going to affect Kimi? I thought, you know, Kimi might like to have had a race immediately the next weekend, not let it get in his head or think about it too much. So I thought it might affect his momentum. But like you say, it clearly didn't. Although it didn't look that way in sprint, it looked like maybe McLaren had turned it around. So I was sort of going through the sprint thinking, oh, that's a bigger shock than I'd expected for this weekend. I expected it to be not as big a shift in the standings as what it looked like then anyway.
I was wondering actually, and I'd love to get your take on this, what do you think McLaren did to be able to kind of close that gap? Do you think it was strategy? Do you think they were able to find, like, kind of, you know, go over the what they'd got from testing? What do you think it was that had really put them more, you know, to the top?
Yeah, I think it sort of depends on where people, like people at the beginning of the year, a look at the calendar, all the different teams, they'll say, where do we think we should target our upgrades? And I think when you were looking at the beginning of the year, the obvious gap was between Miami and Canada, because it's a nice few weeks there to get parts made and on the car and make sure that everything's working when you bring it to the Canada race again. So I think that was the obvious position for people to bring upgrades. Mercedes appear to have stuck to that plan, said, right, we're going to continue to target Canada. And I guess from Mercedes' position of being strongest in the first three races, that still makes sense. I think the others, McLaren in particular, have said, okay, we've got this extra gap now. We can put some extra resource on these upgrades. We don't need to worry about our normal components that we're bringing to Bahrain and Jeddah. Let's try and target Miami. So a number of teams have brought those upgrades forward into Miami, which Mercedes didn't do. So I think Canada will be a bigger indication of how the order actually stands, you know, when both teams have got their upgrades there. But McLaren, and rightly so, have targeted those upgrades a bit better. I think the standout thing for me when you look at the whole weekend, because obviously Mercedes, or at least Kimi, came a lot stronger through the race, was McLaren clearly learnt or went into the sprint weekend better prepared with car setup, with how the engine modes were going to work, with how they were going to work through qualifying, through sprint qualifying. So they have obviously worked hard. We, at the start of the year, we were very critical, or not very critical, but at least a lot of discussion about McLaren not being on top of engine performance and how to get the most out of that engine qualifying. And they've clearly used the break through their simulator with their Mercedes engine engineers to make sure they understood that car. So they seem to be very much on the front foot in sprint qualifying, and then Mercedes caught up into the main race.
And just on that too, you mentioned they weren't a big fan of what was happening with the engine and obviously the new regulations, both drivers critical. We know that we've gone into Miami with tweaks of these regulations from the FIA. Do you think that could have made a difference? Those, I mean, I feel like we're still trying to figure out the difference these tweaks will make, but do you think that worked in McLaren's favour, why they were able to get that edge on Mercedes over the weekend?
I think it obviously did. I think parts of it did in the fact that they definitely, for the sprint qualifying and the sprint event, they were stronger initially. They were better at how their deployment was going to work, got the best out of the engine, seemed to be more on top of it. Even maybe at times through the race where Kimi Antonelli was doing some of his overtaking moves, it still looked like McLaren had a little bit of the upper hand there. So I think they have really pushed on that sort of simulation side of things. The new rules, you know, we've only got one race, so we can't really say how it's going to totally change qualifying. I think that we've seen, you know, this is, and also for me, this was the first race that I wasn't at, so it's the first one I watched from home. So the other races, it's very hard to make a judgment call on how the cars look through qualifying when you're sort of so embedded in it or on the pit wall or whatever the case is. But, you know, qualifying looked quite good this weekend, I thought, in terms of how the cars were performing, in terms of how going into the braking zones and things. Obviously, some of that you're shielded a little bit from on the TV, but it looked pretty good. We still had some overtaking in the racing. Some of it was questionable, but we still had overtaking there. So, based on a single event of Miami, it seems like the tweak is definitely a step in the right direction. The calendar is going to be a different challenge with the long straights that are there. So a bit more time, I think, to make judgment on that one.
I found it interesting, some of the strategy calls that were happening during the race, like at McLaren at one stage, the engineer saying to Norris, let them yo-yo. You know, we're seeing now teams really engaging with these new regulations in how they're dealing with their strategies. Has that been maybe a steep learning curve behind the scenes, or how do you think they've been dealing with this?
Yeah, I think it has definitely been a good step of a learning curve, because I think teams weren't really sure how much information they'd be fit to gather on each other. They weren't sure on how the battery deployment would go, for example. I think now they've started to learn that as someone uses their battery, then maybe they're a bit vulnerable. So there is this back and forth. I think we're all aware that as soon as the driver pushes a deployment button in order to attack or defend, then overall their lap time suffers, which has always been the case in fairness. You know, we've always optimized how the engine uses fuel and battery around a lap. And any time that it deviates from that, it does take away ultimate lap time. So I think there has been a big learning curve there. I think there was, you know, there was interesting strategy. That was an interesting call, I think. We'd sort of expected Kimi Antonelli to drive a bit more off into the distance than what actually ended up happening there. So McLaren were definitely on top of that one. The other interesting call was a call that was given that said, I think it was from Norris saying, oh, I just want to do what the guy in front does in strategy. I think at the point that they were starting to do pit stops, I thought, well, that's a very interesting call. Like, you can't just do what the guy in front does. So yeah, I think they have been on top of overall the game plan, if you like, of how to get the best out of these engines, and they are getting stronger and stronger in that. And we've seen McLaren in previous years be very good at development, so that's never really an area we expected them to struggle.
And I suppose that's kind of looking at how teams are approaching dealing with their competitors. For Mercedes, what we're really looking at now, I suppose, is Antonelli and Russell both hopefully now vying for a championship. It's a very different situation the Mercedes have been in for the past few years, and the dynamic between you have a very young driver and a very experienced driver. How are they going to be handling going into the summer swing, that sort of dynamic? Is it far too early in the season to be thinking of any long-term plans?
I think it possibly is. I think, you know, George Russell came out and said this wasn't a good track for him in Miami. We know that Kimi Antonelli's been strong there in the past. I think George probably didn't expect at this stage of the season or over the last few races for Kimi to be winning the championship. I probably nor did Kimi. So George is sort of probably feeling a little bit like he's on the back foot. He's just 20 points behind, like you said, at the top. How does he regain that momentum? And now, at the moment, he's not clearly the fastest car. So he's going to have to see what upgrades they bring to Canada. But he's got to feel like maybe this was in the bag and now it's slipping away, drifting away slightly. But, you know, even if we look at last year's championship between Norris and Piastri, it was back and forth quite a lot. Who was a championship contender, who we thought would do best. So still a long, long way to go, as we all know on that. But I think how Mercedes handle it as a team, how Toto handles it, I think will be quite different to how McLaren handles it. You would expect them to be more erring on the side of maybe at times prioritising one driver over another, but we just don't know. And I think that's a tough call for Toto or the team in general, because you have George Russell, who's stayed with the team for so long, has been so loyal to Mercedes through the Williams program, then into Mercedes. And then you have Kimi, who's clearly the person they've put, you know, a lot of eggs in that basket. They've promoted him early into the team. And actually, you know, it's worth a shout out to Toto, because when he went in last year, a lot of people questioned if it was too early, if he was too young, what the point of it was. But now he's built the experience, is really sort of really going to stand to him this season. And great, you know, if they can continue to battle against each other, the two McLaren drivers, as we know, are very close, two Ferrari drivers. So depending on which team comes out stronger in any weekend, we know we have a race on our hands, and that's really exciting.
And looking at Ferrari too, still very dangerous for Mercedes and McLaren. Obviously, there was two unfortunate moments for both Lewis, who was hit by Colapinto very early on. He had to carry that damage throughout the race. And then we had Charles, who had that really unfortunate spin right on the last lap. But do you think that Ferrari came into Miami very dangerous? Could they have been, I mean, Charles obviously took the lead at the start. Could that have been a Ferrari podium for you, do you think? Or do you think there's still a lot more for Ferrari to do to be able to get to the top?
I think there's a little bit for them to do, but they're much, much closer than we've seen. I think, like, exactly as you outlined there, Charles Leclerc in particular had a strong weekend and strong race performance. You know, getting into the lead early on, if he'd been able to sort of hold on to that or manage that a little bit better. But I think that car is not that far away. You know, the gap between the top three, there's strengths and weaknesses to all of the cars. We talked about it a lot in the engines in terms of start performance or different track styles. So I think Ferrari, and particularly at the beginning of the race, they always look quite strong. So it's going to be very interesting to see if they can continue to use that and maximise that. I think they need to be maximising their qualifying position and then maximising how much of a gap they can open in those early laps when they appear to have the upper hand on others, before sort of degradation gets in the way of that. So a little bit more for them to do, but very, very close. And I think that, you know, between those three, we're going to continue to talk about those teams.
Are drivers becoming more happy with qualifying? Because we were chatting on the pod to Romain Grosjean a few weeks ago, and I'm kind of asking him, would you like to be racing this new era of cars? And he said, well, not the qualifying. I want to be going flat out in qualifying. And we're not seeing that right now. Do you think that's something that will be improving soon?
I think the new regulations, as we had it this weekend for Miami, are a step in the right direction. Now, should they go more in that direction? Uncertain. I think that certain tracks are going to be more or less of a limitation. So basically what the drivers are talking about there, and, you know, it was explained pretty well, I think, is that at the moment, because of how the energy management is working, they're basically trying to regain energy just before the braking zone. So the car, through its electronic energy management and through a bit of lift and coast, if the driver's doing that, is taking top speed off before they get to the braking zone of the corner. So the speed is reducing before they get to the corner. Now, that means they enter the corner at a lower speed. So there's less driver skill, if you like, in getting around that corner. Now, the energy's been deployed in different ways, in that at the moment we're seeing earlier on in the straight much, much higher speeds than we would have ever seen before in Formula One. So sort of a third of the way down the straight, they're going much faster than they ever were. But arguably, there's less driver skill involved in straight line speed. So although the lap time is pretty good, overall, it's sort of how the driver skill comes into that. And you have people like, you know, Max Verstappen's probably been the most vocal, but equally Max Verstappen is the driver that arguably benefits the most from his own performance in particularly those high-speed corners. And if you take away the high-speed nature of the corner, you obviously take away his ability to make the difference with the car. And that is something that, you know, the drivers have been very vocal about. It's something we all love to see. We like to see drivers driving on the very edge of their ability. Now, there is different driving skill involved in preempting what speed you're going to enter the braking zone, if you like. So yes, it might be lower speed, but it might be slightly different every lap. So there's more driver skill and, let's say, reacting to that. And we have seen more mistakes in lockups or, you know, going off track. We have seen potentially more errors through the lack of downforce that these cars have. So there is still a good element of driver skill, but all drivers want to go fast. That is, you know, unanimous across the board. And they just see it potentially as a little step back from the cars they had last year. But I think when I was in, I think it was Australia, and I was chatting to Jenson Button, who I obviously worked with in 2014. And that's when the first hybrid car came in. And he said at that stage, we were very energy limited. And everyone didn't really understand how we were ever going to get the best out of these cars. Now, when those cars finished racing at 2025, you know, 10 years later, nobody's talking about the car being energy limited, because over those 10 years, we've got better and better and better at how we get the energy out of the battery. And that's where, you know, we're back at that 2014 step with these cars. So I think over time, it should improve. It's good that the FIA, I think, have taken some changes quickly, but there's more to do, definitely more to do in qualifying. And, you know, hopefully they can continue to talk and get the best out of these cars between teams and drivers and FIA.
And on this, a question I've been really looking forward to asking you is, do you think that the energy management has taken away from the kind of beating heart of traditional racing strategy? And from like a strategic point of view, do you think that is taking away from that driver ability, like you just touched on there, and it is going to be more car energy focused? And what would you like to see from further tweaks in regulations as a result of that?
Yeah, so I think if I start with the second question first, I think the move that I personally would have made between 2025 and this season would have been just to change the fuel to sustainable fuel. And now we've made the change to the battery and we've made the change to sustainable fuel, but the sustainable fuel is really powerful. I think that has great scope to change a lot of our energy worries that we have in the world, how we use fossil fuels, for example. So I think that move has and will be very, very powerful in terms of how we start to solve some of the energy crisis that we have. And that's what we should be using, you know, Formula One for, has been used for many years. So that's the first thing. The second, how do I think it takes away from the pure racing? I think since for a long, long time now in racing, we have had some sort of electronic systems that have aided the driver in some way, be it, you know, previously we've had traction control and power steering and all these things that, you know, I'm sure at any point that they come in, someone would say traction control takes away from pure racing, or ABS takes away from pure racing, or power steering, or any of these elements, you know, sequential shifts, gear shifts, things that we don't even think about now, obviously are not, they take a little bit away of that driver skill of when he's going to do his shift and how he's going to re-engage the clutch and all these things. So there's all these things that have progressed as part of the development cycle of the car. So yes and no. I understand that we don't want to see as much of the coasting going into a corner. That's not great to see in qualifying. But I do think that some sort of energy management, like I say, with the hybrids, has been happening in racing since 2014. We've just not been talking about it all the time. Now, more so in racing than in qualifying. I think that's a big difference now, is that we're starting to see more of it in qualifying. And if we can correct the qualifying, then I'm not so worried about it from a racing point of view. There's always been, even last year, we've been managing brake temperatures or tyre temperatures or whatever. So there's always some degree of the pit wall asking the driver to do something that is not go as fast as he possibly can do on track. And that's existed in racing since I've been on the pit wall. So in the racing, I don't think so. In qualifying, I think that's where most of the complaints from the drivers come from. That's where most of their sort of, they would like to see a more pure lap where they can just do anything they want and not worry about the consequences so much.
It's always when you peek behind the scenes, or like you're looking in at the pit wall or at the strategy wall at Formula One, and how many things you guys are controlling at any given time. And the one thing you can't control, of course, is the rain. So Miami obviously pushed forward by a few hours, and then there was this constant threat of rain during the race. It didn't really materialise. But what I was interested to ask you is that from your background in strategy, when you have these rainy races, I think fans love it when it doesn't, you know, fully cancel the race, like a Spa 21. Yeah. Like, fans love the excitement. Do strategists hate it? Is this where your finely laid plans are put into chaos? Or maybe if you're a backmarker, are you going, thank God, some rain, we can do something here more than we might be able to?
I think it's a really big split, and I think the same is true across the drivers. Some people will think that it brings in this great opportunity to score big points and causes a bit of chaos, and therefore, you know, you think of a normal wet race, you've got less finishers, so the people at the back have more chance of being in the points or closer to the points. So it's a real split amongst drivers and strategists and engineers alike. I always sort of feared the wet race a little bit, because although there was more opportunity, there was obviously more opportunity for failure as well. And there's very, very few wet sessions or wet races that you come out of it and you think, yeah, I totally guessed that. You know, there's always something that you think you could have done something a little bit different or reacted a little bit differently. I think it really ramps up the number of inputs that you have to look at, because normally in a race, like a standard dry race, you maybe check out the wind conditions every 10 laps or something to make sure it's not changed dramatically, but normally it's pretty okay, or normally you can predict pretty well how that goes. The weather radar just brings this whole added element. So, for example, you know, this race, like you said, was totally dry, but as well as trying to predict, okay, what is the optimum lap for us to stop on in a dry race, the teams will also be looking at, okay, what if it rains in 10 laps? So you think of the Max Verstappen decision to stop under that early safety car. I wonder how much, in part, that's driven by the fact that they know they need to stop again because they've done that early stop. So that could be because they're predicting rain in 20 laps time, or that they're just going to stop again at that point anyway. So it's one of these things that you've got this massively extra added element into the strategy. All of the meetings become much more hard work because you've got to go through all of your normal dry strategies and then start to talk about all the wet ones, and the wet has millions of permutations. So it massively ramps up your workload on the pit wall and in the car, and you know, for the engineers and the guys building the car as well. And you very, very rarely, there's been a few races that I've come away and thought, like, okay, we used that. But more often than not, in those wet, changeable conditions, you will come away and think there's something that could have been done better or differently. So it's a real test. And I think to come back after the break and have me straight into that test has been, even though nothing materialised, I think it'll still have been quite a lot of workload for all involved.
And kind of going off that external factor that could impact the race, talking about penalties as well, a few were handed out at the weekend. Obviously, Charles was unfortunate, couldn't have been given any earlier, but Max was given his 5-second penalty after the race, despite it happening early on during that first safety car when he crossed the line coming out the pits. Do you think that stewards were too slow in handing that out? Because that could have made an impact. You know, we used to see these stop and go penalties during the race that had to be done within there. Do you think that could be impacting, you know, potentially people's positions on the grids, potential podiums?
Yeah, I think so. There's a few things from the weekend. There was the penalty that was handed out in qualifying for Carlos Sainz, I think it was, on the going off track. And then there was Max's in the race. I think the going off track one, normally in data, there is a little signal that says you're close to track limits. And then that's an indication for people to go and look at it and look through the footage and stuff. Similarly with Max's one, you know, that is a really black and white penalty in terms of it's the same every week. There's a pit lane and an exit. It's just, we do 22 to 44 pit stops a week. So, and it's something that I know other teams specifically look at. They look at other people's onboards to make sure, you know, they've got people dedicated to doing that sort of thing in their mission controls. So I think that some of the, to think of it the other side, from the steward side, why could it not have been done? So I'm fully on the camp of that should have been action during the race. We should be in a better position in terms of our rule of judgment in order to do that quickly. Something like a pit lane exit It's a camera, it's one static camera, a pit lane exit that potentially looks down the line. When you think of what's possible in tennis, for example, you know, when they can show exactly where the ball hits on the court and, you know, go through the replay and really, really quickly get an answer, why are we not at that stage? And part, I can imagine part of the reason is because Miami is a temporary circuit. And places like Miami, Baku, Monaco, it's all set up every year. And hopefully that this just means that in next season, they do a better job of having that camera on pit exit. Because from the onboard, it looked pretty clear cut. It looked pretty obvious. So, yeah, I think it is disappointing that that penalty wasn't given out at the time. And I think, although you could say a 5-second penalty given out in the race is the same as a 5-second penalty at the end of the race, it's not necessarily because that 5 seconds in the next pit stop, let's say the next pit stop happens to fall under a safety car, that is several positions. So there may be examples where the 5 seconds doesn't come to any fruition by the end of the race because he's been able to do the pit stop and it's not made any difference. But there could be examples where it's lost several positions on track and therefore it's extra overtakes and it ends up accumulating more than 5 seconds. So I think it's important that we try and get those rulings done as early as we can in the race. Or like I think you're sort of alluding to, if he was in a podium position, suddenly you're celebrating a podium that you think might not be the podium anymore. And that's not what we want to see as fans. It's not what we want to see as commentators either, I think.
I mean, I think Max Verstappen's been in that position a couple of times where he's been kind of about to step on the podium only to be told, no, mate, you've got 5-second penalties come through. To touch a bit briefly on Red Bull, actually, a bit of a topsy-turvy race for Max Verstappen. You're a little bit of an issue on the first lap and then you're battling through the midfield, which is very, I mean, classic Max Verstappen. We've seen him power through the grid before. Poor Hadjar, though, to a really disappointing weekend in that sense. Not hectic either on the sprint racing and the qualifying there. How were Red Bull kind of aiming to approach this 5-week gap and heading into the summer? Because we've been talking so far about Mercedes, about McLaren, about Ferrari, and it's perhaps surprising that Red Bull is still slightly adrift of those kind of top three conversations.
Yeah, I think they've had a difficult season. Hadjar, I think, has done an amazing job, you know, ignoring this again. I think he's really good in that second seat. Even including this again, you know, those sort of mistakes happen. I think that their first thing is to try and get Max Verstappen happy in the car. I think Lauren Mekies is, I really rate Lauren Mekies as a manager there. I think he will stabilise the team eventually. Obviously, there's still been people leaving, but some of that will be historic and it's not just all reaction to Lauren joining. So I think he will stabilise the team eventually, but the team has, first of all, got to get on top of Max's lack of understanding of the car, even if that doesn't necessarily make the car faster on paper. So if the car is more predictable, then they know that Max will get more out of the car, even if that's not necessarily ultimate performance of the car. So sometimes you can design things that in one very, very small snapshot of the performance window, the car is better than the old car. But if the driver can't always find that snapshot of performance window, then it's not overall a quicker lap time. So I think that's potentially what Red Bull have tried to do. They've tried to sort of get Max happier in the car, stabilise it, and then they can build from there. So they can start to build performance and put performance onto that car. And, you know, Max did show elements of that, I think, without the spin on lap one, which so unusual for Max to have that. But without that spin, he would have been in a much, much stronger position through the race. I always find it impressive that he could do those 360 spins and still know exactly where he's going and immediately put the throttle back in, because it would definitely take me more than a minute to decide I was going in the right direction. Probably more than a minute to open my eyes again. But yeah, like it's just so incredible for him that most other drivers, had that happened, would have collected someone else at some point during the spin. So fair play to Max for that. And then, you know, the Red Bull as a team reacted really well by switching up their strategy, doing the early stop lap under the safety car, trying to get him in, you know, an offset strategy to others where he could use the tyres. So I think they are going to have, they've got their work cut out, I think, to sort of continue to bring that car forward, but now they've got hopefully a better base to start from, and that will be key, I think, to the Red Bull challenge.
And just on, this is a question we're constantly asking ourselves, which is Max Verstappen's future. He came back after the break and said, we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So it's clear he's happier in this car. He's a lot more optimistic going towards a race. Do you think that there is a way to keep him in this sport? I mean, he's obviously not said he's going anywhere, but there's been questions. Do you think that there's a chance he still could be leaving, say, after this season, after the next, especially with Lambiasi going? Do you think that's, you know, a way to keep him in that car if he's happy enough in it?
I think the Max and GP relationship, they've obviously been together for a long time, but those things happen. Drivers and engineers move on, and I think it's part of Max might see that as a new challenge, whoever comes next that replaces the GP position, and possibly it's someone from within the team that he already knows. Obviously none of that's been announced as such yet. I think Max is a pure racer. He loves racing. We see that in his sort of his GT racing now, doing the Nordschleife stuff. He just wants to race. So I think if Red Bull can provide him a car that's quick enough, and if the F1 regulations can give him a car that he believes he can get the best out of, then there is good reason that Max will stay racing in F1. But I think he needs to have, and you know, maybe this weekend, those regulations, and a sprint favours him a little bit as well, because he can get the best out of the situation. If we can get the regulations to a point where qualifying is still pushing the performance envelope of the car, and not so much a management thing, then I think all of that will encourage Max to stay. And I think it is, you know, it's important for the sport to have these characters, I think, within it. Max is obviously a phenomenal driver. So I think it would be a pity, but, and he's not said yes or no, but he's, I think, as long as he believes that he can push the car to the absolute maximum and have that advantage over his competitors, I think he'll stay.
Kind of speaking of people who've had really good weekends, I just really wanted to touch on these three drivers before kind of the end of the pod. First of all, Franco Colapinto, yeah, his best ever result. It was a real kind of, for me at least, a coming of age performance from a young driver within a team that's doing, I think, far better than anyone expected,
yeah,
at the beginning of the year, Alpine. And then for Sainz and Albon, both to be in the points. It's great for a Williams team who at the beginning of the season, it was looking really dark for them. So really positive result for those three.
Yeah, I think, so if I start with the Williams one, I think everyone's been pretty honest in saying the car's overweight. So it's every weight, every kilogram, half a kilogram, gram that they take off the car will all be helping performance. And it was nice to see, you know, both of the drivers seemed a lot more optimistic this weekend, seemed a lot more positive in their feedback or their radio messages, for example. So that is good for the Williams team. They are a strong team, you know. I think James Vowles at the top of that team is a good leader, and it's just about trying to manage that. I think all of the teams, when I spoke to them sort of a year and a half ago, thought that this year would be a challenge weight-wise, because the minimum weight that the car had to be at came down, even though the engine and the battery weight had actually gone up. So it was always going to be a challenge for these teams. Williams being a bit more on the back foot for that, but hopefully they can see sort of progression now, and it escalates from there. So that is a really strong performance, and I think both drivers, they could get both drivers a car that would challenge. Both drivers have the ability to always be there picking up the points where they can. The Alpine and Colapinto one, Alpine were much stronger than I expected this weekend. Wow, I just, you sort of look at how people did over the break and the sort of shift at the top we talked about a lot, but when you look through the qualifying sessions and you begin to see the Alpine team, you think, wow, they've actually, you know, like they've really got their work done. And I think a team like that is very good, or should be very good, at focusing on what they think are going to make the biggest difference. So there's loads and loads of work to be done, same with Williams, but it's like, what is going to make the biggest difference? Like, focus on these little aspects in order to get the most out of the car. So yeah, I think that, you know, you've hit it right there. It was a good drive, a good result for that team. And I think hopefully the boost for that helps to carry forward, you know, into the Canada weekend.
Kind of just to wrap things up here, speaking of Canada in Montreal, a fantastic circuit, one that I always love watching. What teams will be looking at this circuit and going, okay, this is going to suit our car?
I think it's going to be a big, I think, well, the few things that I would be looking out for is, what can Mercedes bring? Mercedes has been very open in saying that They didn't bring their upgrades really to Miami, their upgrades to Target in Canada. There's some big numbers floating around about what they might be worth. So can Mercedes really, you know, open that gap again, or are others also bringing answers to that? Because, you know, we still have a few week gap to do that, and maybe they'll have had an extra week testing their upgrades. Canada is going to be a challenge potentially for these engines and for the changes that we've made in regulations more than Miami, because we do have the long straights there. Obviously, it can at times be really affected by wind conditions. And as we sort of mentioned for Miami, it's a little bit earlier this year, so it's going to potentially be very affected by rain conditions. Hopefully not, because I'm on the ground there. But it's always a really nice race. And I think, you know, anyone who gets a chance to, Montreal is a brilliant one to go to. I actually went last year with my parents just because I thought it was a good experience for them. But the city's amazing. It's nice. You can get in and out of the track. Yes, Montreal is a really embraces like loads of street parties and stuff. So Montreal's a really cool one.
Making us jealous here, Bernie.
I really want to be there.
I know, but it's one to like sort of to try, and it's one of my cities I really actually quite like going to. So I'm glad to be going back again this year. And I think that, yeah, the straight lines are definitely going to be a challenge there for lots of the drivers and teams. So, you know, arguably it's one that I don't know how much you guys talked about it on the podcast, but there's been a lot of talk about the turbos in these cars and the small turbo versus the big turbo. So people like Ferrari with the very small turbo getting better initial straight line speed, so out of the corners, but then it might allow Audi to come back a little bit because they have these long straights, which should allow over the whole street these cars to really, really come into their own. So yeah, it's going to be really, it's different to the tracks that we've been to so far this year. So hopefully it's a dry one and we can get another marking performance.
So Montreal is 3 weeks away, but next week the F1 pod is actually going to Mondello Park. On Saturday, we're going to be hearing for some exciting voices at the historic festival. So please, everybody, keep an eye on that. Bernie Collins, thank you very much. This was a really interesting conversation.
No worries. Sorry if I spoke too much for the questions, but yeah, really lovely to speak to everyone.
There's no such thing as speaking too much. That's all we do on this podcast.
Thank you so much, Bernie.
Thank you very, very much. And as always, the F1 pod on Off The Ball is brought to you by KitKat, bringing brakes to the fastest sport in the world. Hashtag have a break. And we will see you very soon with some exciting news from Mondello.
The Formula One pod on Off The Ball. Brought to you by KitKat. Hit pause. Have a break. Have a KitKat.